I would love to see institutions and policy and funding for the artists and for the culture that is being created now that doesn't look like those older established institutions. I think there's enough for everyone, and I think there's abundance if we just tap into it. I think what I would want to see in the music scene is like a microcosm or a parallel of what I want to see in society at large, like just more people being able to access those resources that have been kept away.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Amplifier, the music podcast where we shine a light on the artist who calls Charlotte home. Because Charlotte is more than just a banking city or a football city. So every other Thursday on this podcast, we're going to explore the people, places, and things that help define the Queen City's crown sound. And today, we'll hear from an LGBT Latinx artist who wants to democratize music for the masses. That's coming up on Amplifier.
Amplifier. And then the beat will drop.
Amplifier.
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 Can you introduce yourself and what you do with music?
Hi, my name is Joseph Kisol. I'm an artist, cultural organizer from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I make music.
And you typically go by the name Kisol, and emphasis on the soul of Kisol.
Emphasis on the soul, that's right.
Can you tell me, Kisol, how you got started in music in Charlotte?
Well, I got started with music growing up. I grew up in Florida, actually, for the until fifth grade, West Palm Beach area, and had Guitar Hero video game. And there was a moment in early middle school, sixth or seventh grade, when that was new, that my brother said, well, we should get real guitars, and because we were killing that game already. So that's when we both got new instruments. So he got an electric guitar and got really into that. He's still a better guitarist than me. He's 21.
So you're saying that playing Guitar Hero doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be an absolute ace at guitar?
I'm saying that if you're winning Guitar Hero, you might be good at actual guitar. It's not the same skill or finger motions, but it translates pretty one-to-one. Shout out to Donkey Konga, too. That was a fun game that, you know, just got us moving and thinking about music more and got us to think, let's make actual music with actual instruments and create our own thing. So I think my generation grew up with these kind of toys and the internet and computers, which meant we could download software, potentially legally, and start creating with whatever we could find. It just kind of grew from there. The more that we learned, the more things that we acquired. I always live by the motto, use what you have to get what you want. So whatever samples I could find for free. When I got to college eventually and got my first Mac computer, that's when I had GarageBand, and it really opened up the production possibilities for me. People would always say, you did that on GarageBand? Because there was this stigma that if you use GarageBand, you're not a serious producer, but it was great for getting the ideas out and bringing to life the sounds that I had floating around in my imagination. And trying my hand at production, because it kind of like started as a light version and it got more and more complicated.
You tonight, 'cause we had it right. So
see. So it's you and the dreams I see, holding tight to what you give to me in hopes of return to set me free.
So besides Guitar Hero and Donkey Kong, what
Konga.
It's a great game. Yeah. What music did you listen to?
So much, because my parents are this anomaly in that my mom is born in Puerto Rico, did the New Yorico thing as a New York Puerto Rican, and moved to Detroit around middle school. So she was East Coast and then some Detroit vibes. And then my dad was born and raised in San Francisco in the Bay Area, so he was West Coast. And when they met each other and eventually started our family, they brought these different influences. And I was talking to my dad yesterday, well, both of my parents yesterday, that because of those times in the 80s when they were young, there wasn't the internet where everybody knew exactly what everyone else was listening to in different parts of the country. So some things made the mainstream, but a lot like freestyle music, we were big into it, made it to the different underground pockets in like in the hoods and the neighborhoods that my parents grew up in. So like Sheila E. was a big thing, Lisa and the Cult Jam, of course, all the salsa. And my dad was listening to like lowrider music and like Malo. And I had mixed CDs that my parents would give each other, because when the internet came out, they started making or remaking a lot of their old mixtapes as CDs. So I was listening to like Two Live Crew. I remember my dad told me I couldn't sing Hoochie Mama out loud.
Because you were too young?
Yeah. Like I had it on a mixtape and say nothing but a Hoochie Mama. Hoorah, hoo. And that was so catchy and it was so fun. And the energy was so incredible. And he's like, son, you just don't sing that one. There's too many words that you shouldn't know about. So there was that. And then like Selena was in there. And like, slow jams were a big thing. And then, of course, like, we were also a church family, but one of those contemporary churches, so I was listening to a lot of Toby Mac, and, like, that was one of the first CDs I had. That one and the Black Eyed Peas' Monkey Business. And I liked them a lot because I saw kind of, like, a reflection of my family in them. Like, it's an eclectic mix. There's a Filipino guy. There's a Spanish guy. There's this Fergie Ambiguous. And then their music was like shouting out to all the things my parents listened to, like all the samples from like, nah, 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 don't funk with my heart. I wonder if I take you home. That was a Lisa song. Yeah. That was like one of my mom's favorite songs. So my parents were like, oh, they sampled this and they sampled that. All this stuff from the underground that we were listening to growing up. But now all the kids don't know where it came from. And that girl, that's that girl, Sally, that girl. It's an old hip hop song too that my dad told me about after he heard it, Black Eyed Peas. So BEP was a big influence and was a connection, like this middle ground between my parents' generation and my generation, where they were experimenting in the old stuff and remixing it and giving us something to talk about in the car.
So how did this persona of Key Soul come about after listening to years of video game soundtracks and BEP?
The name or the artist? Or
I don't know. Take that way you like, because
I'm thinking about both of those.
Yeah.
So for the name, of course, that is my last name, Key Soul. My dad's Filipino, so that's brought over from the Philippines. And it's a Spanish-sounding name that's not really anywhere in Spain. So my theory is that when the colonizers came to the Philippines and forced people to change their names to be more easily pronounceable by the conquistadors, that's kind of where Key Soul came about. So it's not quite Spanish, it's not quite indigenous, it's something in the middle, which is like most people from like formerly colonized places. When it came time to just put out my own music, I was messing with different like Joe Q, J Quiz, whatever, and then I just said, let's keep it Key Soul. Cleaner, it honors my, you know, lineage a little bit more. And that's something that I try to embody as an artist, honoring my lineage, honoring the history of what my parents brought me, what my grandparents brought me, not only in music, but in aesthetics and values, in fashion, my jeans are pegged right now. It's like an 80s thing from the Bay. I wear a Barong Tagalog, which is like a traditional Filipino formal shirt. It's made from pineapple fibers. It's kind of see-through, so it's kind of sexy. You're supposed to wear like a white undershirt underneath it, but like I'm taking the liberties to not do that. So that's like I try to feature that in what I do. So like in pictures, in performances, in a music video I'm doing, I'm wearing the barong. And I have like objects that I've inherited from my grandparents' generation, like I try to incorporate into the and bring their energy into the visuals that go with the music that I'm making these days.
What was the first time that Kisol the artist, Joseph the artist, mm-hmm. came out as like the debut concert or the mm-hmm. debut song of sorts?
Well, I did play music throughout high school in a high school praise band at Mecklenburg Community Church. The singers at that church, like country harmonies. I love those three-part harmonies, those thick, like the lead guy with the guitar and then the two background singers and the drum and the bass and the keys. And yeah, I got my bearings there. I owe them so much. Like I learned how to wrap cables and to set up a stage and to organize band practices through that church. And then I carried that on to Charleston, South Carolina, where I did that with the Journey Church, Presbyterian Church. They were cool. They were gay affirming. they provided that stage. They provided that foundation. And from there, I went into college, and I think that's when I really started putting out my own music. I mean, in high school, while I was still performing in church and stuff, I started playing with a band called Yara, Jamil Yara Moore. And we went to James Alexander Middle School together. That was my first band. That was the first time that we put out music. As this isn't anybody else's songs, this isn't church music. These are songs that Jamil wrote that we as a group of friends came together and brought to life as this live music project. After we went separate ways for school, Jamil went to App State, I went to College of Charleston, and the other guys went over to other places. I missed that band energy, and I missed having the music, and realized that if I wanted to keep going, I just had to write my own stuff and put out my own stuff. And that's really when it started going, around 2012, 2013. This is like the old, old stuff on my SoundCloud. I have things on SoundCloud going back to 2012 too, from like those GarageBand days, and they're so like pure and just whimsical and folky. And I want to keep them there because I always want to remember where I started and how things have changed.
Schitter in de zon, warm op je gezicht, stilte om ons heen, alles voelt zo licht, met de beetje dat ik spreek. Ik kan een paar dingen zeggen, dat ze het zouden zeggen, simpel en puur. Someone here visiting, someone off the bunk, hit a pepper gun, hier ik zit en ik denk, alles goed met mijn friends. All in my friends.
It was kind of like soft Kiesel before then, before Charlotte.
Soft Kiesel.
As in, like, I played stuff in Charleston, South Carolina, like open mics. And that's when I, like, these songs were fresh and were incubating. When I graduated and came back to Charlotte, I think I officially started Kiesel at the same time that I started Queens Collective. So they're very related, and the letter Q is obviously important to me. in that, coming from Charleston and going to a lot of house shows and punk concerts, seeing on the internet like So Far Sounds and stuff like that, I thought that was so cool. And I thought it was amazing that you could just go to someone's living room and there's people brought PAs and music and booze and people were just having a good time and the police didn't come and it was great. So I wanted to do that here, and I didn't really want to listen to like folk music or like guys on guitars because I was kind of tired of that at that point. So that's when I reached out to people I knew just from growing up here, middle school and high school friends and their friends who did music. And I was like, hey, like, are people doing house shows around here? Like, I want to do a house show. So we met up at a friend of mine from middle school, Darian. She goes by Mara Robin now. So we were at her house in the west side of Charlotte. They had done some like events there. I got my friends together, and that was the first show, December 2016. That was the debut show. And I think like 80-something people packed the house in the wow. front yard. We had like tents outside with people like painting, and we had people selling their art and the music, and it was free, and people just like, I think we left like $20 in donations that day. Aww. But it was worth it because someone picked up a mix tape I made. Oba from The Function picked up my CD and was like, hey, this is dope. And they asked me to do a show. Function asked me to do like a bunch of shows during that year in Charlotte, and then that was just, it just kept going from there.
And this was just a group of friends that you brought together to perform music. You hadn't really done yeah. sound checks or rehearsals before, and that was it.
Well, everybody kind of knew each other, friends of friends kind of deal. And everybody had been doing music. And, well, what happened was we had a meeting in October, and we're like, okay, let's do like a Halloween time show. But then that's when the Charlotte Uprising hit. And like Keith Lamont Scott and the CMPD and all of this stuff. And then Justin Carr and Raekwon Boreham. And we were like, okay, we need to go on pause. There's other things that are more important to our community right now that we all wanted to work on. So I think we took that time apart, and we're, in spite of the tragedy and the crisis happening here, a bunch of new connections were made and people started coming together in ways they hadn't before around this crisis. And I think after that, everyone was primed to like really just celebrate as an act of resistance, Black and brown artistry, queer artistry. And that's kind of what Queens Collective, not almost, I think it was just destined to be this way, that is run by like a gay dude, some lesbians who are all Black and brown, some trans folks. Like, we didn't try to make it that way. It's just like out of the resistance and out of the spirit, these are the people who came together, and this is the music that we highlighted. And it wasn't like a gay club or anything. It was like we had all these, they call it QDPOC, queer trans people of color, QDPOC artists come together. And then like next to like just straight dudes, hip hop. And it worked. And it was kind of queer, but it was kind of not. And everywhere outside, not everywhere, but like when we went to like Petra's or to Snug Harbor, it was like, it's kind of queer, but it's kind of not too. And it's like, this is, it's just comfortable and it feels like home. And that's kind of the vibe that we kept going throughout Queens Collective. It was just inclusive space that cared about the community and that supported our artists from here.
When I look into your eyes, you see a part of me I ain't never seen in anyone ever before. Can't believe who you and why you're.
Coming up, Kisoul on QDPOC representation in the music scene and how he's handing you the tools to break down musical barriers. That's right after this break on Amplifier.
One more kiss, just one more kiss, can I get? One more kiss, just one more kiss, can I get? One more kiss before we will let it go. And can I get?
As we're recording this, the Charlotte has just finished celebrating Pride mm-hmm. in August. Mm-hmm. And you actually performed at Pride this year. I'd love to hear more about the Charlotte music scene when it comes to LGBTQIA+ mm-hmm. and everyone under that rainbow umbrella, mm-hmm. because that's something that this series hasn't really touched as much on. I've talked to Perry Fowler of Petra's a bit, but I'd love to hear your ideas and your voice about that.
I think what I loved about Pride was seeing all these different artists that I'd kind of seen either at the bar music venues or at like the club, like Scorpio, or just like on Instagram, social media, where they're all like serving looks and whatnot on the stage. And I remember the group that went on right before me had a person named Fudge Rocks and two other dancers. And I knew Fudge Rocks did music and I see them on Instagram. And then the other dancers, I was like, oh my God, I know y'all from the Scorpio. Because at the Scorpio on the west side, I think it's off Freedom, they would have the nightclub and then, okay, it's time for the drag queens. And then there were always these three that came out and they killed this Beyonce choreography, just like killed it. And everybody was so hype and that club is huge. It's like two stories and like hundreds of people can fit in there. And then I see them hop on the Pride stage and I'm like, okay, let's see what's about to happen. And yeah, so there's that. The Scorpio, I think, has provided a stage for a certain section of the queer community. So there's that scene happening and I've seen people come out of that. And then there's Dexter performed that day as well, Dexter Jordan. We met through SoundCloud, actually. Met in person and became friends and we would practice with each other at our friend Nick's house, who was in my band, and that trajectory from just meeting on SoundCloud to becoming friends and making music together, and he's featured on my EP, and he will be on my new album coming out, and he came through the whole, like, he was, like, singing on beats and was known within the producer crowd. And then I think when we became friends, he expanded into the band scene. And now you can play Snug Harbor and Petra's and Pride because you have a band now. So that was really cool to see Dexter take off with a lot of people who were also involved with the Queens Collective movement back in those times. Yeah, so when it comes to talking about the LGBTQIA+ music scene, there's some of us who make bands, there's some of us who are rappers, there's some of us who are kind of like pop divas and have the whole choreography vibe to it. So there's many different expressions.
And you're saying that taking place in Petras, you're saying that taking place in Scorpio and Snug Harbor. What about the other venues in town? I mean, it sounds like to a certain extent, Queens Collective, which in a way is like a DIY house show movement of sorts. It's allowing for a safe space, a space where really anyone could play anything and it's welcomed.
Yeah.
But it sounds like that came out of a need where that wasn't being experienced in Charlotte when it comes to the music scene. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I remember the first conversation I had about Queens Collective. I approached Darian about if she had any shows coming up because I just wanted to like go support. And she's like, no, I don't have any shows coming up. And I said, well, what if we threw our own? And she's like, I've actually been thinking about doing that. So because no one had like that connection already where they were already just in the venues, we did our own events and got enough buzz about them so that a venue could be like, oh yeah, you can play here now. And then we pack the house and they pay us and it's great. So I think when you don't have a platform, you have to make your own. And then people start taking notice. And I appreciate all of the hustle and drive of artists from not just Charlotte, but around the South. I think we have a strong tradition of like underground culture and even relating to like the civil rights movement and like it's just social movement stuff. There's this back and forth between as we march for our rights and organize, we're also like producing our own shows and celebrating our own culture. And I should mention that a good friend of a lot of us here who represents a lot of that, Monte Carlo. Monte just passed a couple days ago, almost a week ago now. And they were just one of those incredible, like, Black, queer artists who were doing a lot of the same thing that I was doing in Charlotte, but in Atlanta. So we were, like, watching each other. And Taylor, I was always watching them, really, because I was learning from them. Like, I'm not really original in Queens Collective, so I got to give credit where credit's due. I think seeing them do that in Atlanta, and they, I'm sure, were taking notes from people who came before them, organizing and creating these kind of things. And it's happening in the underground culture all over the country. And I think Erica Badu described it really well, the worldwide underground. There's like this thing happening around the world.
You've used the word organize or organizer a few times since we started this conversation. True. And I'd love to hear your definition when it comes to what you do, because you describe yourself as an organizer. So what does that mean?
Yeah, so I think originally it was labor organizing. So the workers aren't getting paid enough, but the bosses need the workers. They need the people to do what they do. So it's about reclaiming that power and flipping that power structure so that where the basis of the triangle is the people and the top is like people who manage it. But reclaiming that power and that those who have positions of power above us can't really do anything unless those at the bottom are supporting it. And if we organize ourselves as a people, then we can reclaim the power, we can create alternative systems that actually support either the work we're doing or the culture that we're making or the music that we actually want to hear. And I think that's something I try to keep in my music. If, for example, Top 40 is feeding us
Ariana
violence.
Grande. Oh, well, that too.
Oh, yeah. If Top 40 is feeding us materialism and violence and like male patriarchy, then we can support artists who care about and write music about the things that we actually care about. And I think that's the cool thing about the internet is that now I can hear the artists who are uplifting and who sound like Christian radio, uplifting and family friendly, who are like representing what you actually want to see in the world and what you think could be better and like touch your soul in ways that something on the radio might not. So I see there being a connection between organizing and the labor, the social justice kind of way, and also like culturally organizing so that you support the artists that people want to see, or that, yeah, no one's just like swooping with a bunch of money and a highly produced person to like win your heart over.
It's real. Can I really know what I feel? How much longer can I wait before my heart starts to break?
Of course, I have to mention that you do a lot of work in Charlotte music, obviously with organizing and wanting to help others succeed, but you do have your own music. And this past year, you released your debut EP of sorts, I guess you could say, called The World Keeps Turning. And it's a beautiful 3-song release. I know it's leading into your full length next year. But I want to take a few minutes to talk about the title track, which is The World Keeps Turning. And there's a lyric from it. Well, the change keeps coming and it keeps me moving, and the change keeps coming and the world keeps turning. And I want to hear from you, what is that change that motivates you to write, to perform music, to do all of this great work that you've been mentioning?
So I wrote that song, The World Keeps Turning, in 2014 in Charleston, in my bedroom. It must have been like early spring semester. And I was taking Western Civilization because I appreciate that class. It was history. It was, I think, at the beginning supposed to like glorify the Western canon. But as the leadership at the university changed, people were like, let's explore the Western canon so we can deconstruct it a little bit and critique. So I... starting from like antiquity to today, basically looking at all these different movements and these revolutions and wars and genocides and colonization. And that was a lot of history and, you know, getting up to date on what has happened in the world since humans started like keeping track of things, as far as we know. And it really inspired me to write something that would say that these changes keep happening and we keep moving and we keep striving to do better and we keep killing each other at the same time. And there's this split between like this extreme optimism that, oh, it's gonna get better one day, and but that feels fake to me, like if you can just be extremely optimistic, but then you can be extremely pessimistic and be like, it's just cycles and cycles of violence and we're just gonna be awful for the rest of time. And thinking, meditating on these two sides, this binary, and being like, well, life and our collective human life has been extremely violent and extremely jubilant. There's violence and there's love and there's all these things happening at different places at the same time. The change keeps coming and it keeps me moving. You know, just weighing these two sides and trying to find a path forward from what you have in front of you is all I can really do, and offer that to other people listening, that let's find a path forward together that works for all of us. recognizing that there will be struggle and that there will be victory at different times.
The planet stay in orbit and I'll be back for sure. But we should take some time to be alone in the quiet. Tell me those words in the quiet. Listen to me in the quiet. I can finally breathe in the quiet.
Kisol's latest release is titled The World Keeps Turning, and his new single is titled The Cards. Find his music on the website kisol.band. and wherever fine music is streamed and sold. Amplifier is a production of WFAE. This episode was written and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Cole Del Charco. Our editors are Greg Collard and Jadon Marshall. Our theme music is provided by Dirty Art Club. Share your favorite Charlotte music recommendations on social media. You can find me and tag me. I'm at A Change of Tune. Amplifier features a new musical talent each and every Thursday, so make sure to subscribe to the Amplifier podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you find podcasts. And if you're listening on NPR One, make sure to give us a heart or a favorite. For more Charlotte music chats, including playlists and a Charlotte music map, visit wfae.org/amplifier. Until next time, I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.